Poundstone is a stand-up comedian and frequent panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. She'll be in Anchorage on June 24th in the Discovery Theater at the Performing Arts Center. Ahead of her upcoming show, she spoke with me, Ann Hillman, on Hometown Alaska. We got the business done first before she reflected on the joys of being with people in person again.
Paula, thanks so much for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I know that promoting your shows isn't your favorite thing to do. You want to get that out of the way first?
I do hate promoting. I do. And I'm called upon to do so much of it because of the way of the world, you know, a lot of silly stuff on Twitter. After a while, you go, you know, I'm going to be at the blah, 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 and the blah, blah, blah. And you have to think of a way of telling people how great it's going to be. And you know what? The truth is, I can't speak for the audience. I know that I get tweets from people and emails from people and sometimes, you know, talk to the audience individually at one time or another telling me that they have had a really good time. But I can speak for myself. The truth is, it is really great. it sounds weird coming from me. It doesn't, you know, it sounds, yeah, doesn't, well, you know, not great.
Except for, like, what makes it great for you, right? Like, from your perspective, why is it cool and fun?
You know, because of the brain. Because the brain gives you these happy chemicals from certain experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is laughter, being in a room of laughter, human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, although I've always loved my job, and I've always been aware that I have the greatest job in the world, I have a terrible thing to confess. I may have, prior to COVID and the stay-at-home order, I may have whined a little bit about the travel. A little bit, a teeny bit. But I'll tell you, along came 15 months of being separated from the audience, being separated from an income, I might add.
Ouch.
But
yeah.
Being separated from the audience. And I now am like, you know what? You can put me in the overhead compartment. I don't care. I'm happy. Great. There's no amount of I don't care. I have in the last, you know, couple of years since the stay-at-home order was over, I have slept in a chair in an airport more than once. I've gotten stranded and at one point I had a promoter driving me someplace and to another job, and the catalytic converter of the rental car that we were in got stolen in the Holiday Inn Express parking lot. And you know, I'm like, just hope we get there. It's all good by me, no problem. Because being with the audience is delightful.
I could see that. Yeah. And like all those things you're describing, maybe minus the catalytic converter, are things that Alaskans can really relate to. Like, I think all of us have slept in airports. All of us have been stuck because a volcano's going off, you know?
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay. I have a fascinating fact for you about me. I once came in third in a dog sled race.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, do you know why I came in third in a dog sled race? Any guesses?
I mean, my assumption would be because you accidentally entered it, like your dogs just happened to be hooked up to you, and then boom, there you were.
No, I came in third, in a dog sled race because there were only two other entrants.
Yeah, I also guessed that. But like, why were you in a dog sled race to begin
with?
Oh,
so that was just understood for you.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, I was working in Fairbanks, I think it was. And they had an annual event in their downtown area where they actually bring in snow. And they cover the main street in snow. And they have dog sled races. And they have like a senior one or something And I was entered into the, knowingly, I knew that, I used someone else's dogs and sleds, and they quickly, we were running a little bit late getting there. They quickly sort of showed me how to do it, but I didn't entirely understand what they said.
Yeah.
And so it was just a very short run. I came in, you know, much after the other two, but it wasn't like through trails and stuff. It was just a straightaway down the street.
Did you finish it? Like, did you get to the end?
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it was short. It was like it was like a 50 yard dash or something as compared to, you know, it was not the Iditarod. It was not trails. It was not, we were not taking medicine to people who couldn't get to it. It was just a straight shot. It was very fun. And I have a trophy and I have a coffee mug with a picture of me and one of the dogs on it.
That's
pretty great.
That's pretty fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Not everyone can say that. Not everyone can say. And then I was out in the country that same day with somebody that had, you know, a place with dogs and sleds. And they took me on a long dog sled ride. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life. It was so quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing you could hear was the occasional dogs, you know, barking. And then, I mean, I'm sure you know all this, but then when we would stop and give the dogs a break, they would dive into the snowbanks like Yukon Cornelius, because that's how they cool. I mean, it was fantastic. And the other thing I think we did, and I don't remember if that was also in Fairbanks, I can't recall. It might have been in another city, went to the ice sculpture.
That was Fairbanks, probably. Yeah.
Festival or whatever. Well, unbelievable. Yeah. So now when I go to like a restaurant and I order a soda, you know, I always say, you know, with ice, and then I just chisel away.
And have a lot of mini sculptures in each glass. That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm.
My work is sought after. All right. You know what? I'm taking you with me.
Okay.
I'm hearing my dog whine at the back door. So speaking of dogs, look.
Yeah. Oh, I want to see. Oh, he's cute.
Can you? Yeah, that's Mo. She's beautiful. She's not well behaved. I'm not a great dog trainer. Sirius, do you want out?
So you have.
And there's the other one.
Okay,
they're
so
both, yeah,
a big lab, neither another one. Big dog.
Do they? Yeah, I have two big dogs.
Yeah,
and 10 cats.
And I feel like that's like one of the most famous things about you.
It's how much animal waste I clean. Yeah, that's a big part of my life.
Well, except for but you're on the road all the time, so logistically, who takes care of the pets and?
On the road all the time. I'm on the road most weeks for two or three nights. Most weeks. The woman that was nanny to my children, and by the way, when the kids were growing up, I was not on the road every week. I was, you know, a couple of nights, many weeks, but not all. You know, I did my best to be home for weekends when I could. You know, because they frown on just putting having a flappy door and putting food and water down for your children. but the woman who was my children's nanny for most of those years, she also took care of the animals while I was gone. And so even when the kids flew the coop, and they did, she still comes and takes care of the animals when I'm gone. So everybody seems happy enough.
So do all of your pets get along?
No. You know, not in a way where they can't be in the room together, but you know, cats are nocturnal, and I get up in the morning and there's tufts of fur all over the rug. They do fight. And I'm not sure over what exactly, but I think sometimes they're not sure which one is the leader. And during those periods, you know, it's like a primary, but not as evil. And the cats and dogs get along just fine. The cats, for the most part, school the dogs. So
yeah.
They would never think of, you know, the dogs are not going to eat the cats because they would lose a limb trying.
Similar dynamic in our household. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do you have 10 cats? Like, what's the, yeah.
It's a question that I've answered many times.
I figured.
And so I could say exactly why I have 10 cats, which is I had 8 and I got 2 more. I guess, like any addict, I think to myself, well, 1 is fun.
Yeah.
2 will be better. And then, and so on and so forth. And and I have to say, overall, that's sort of been true. I thought I was done. I thought I would, because I had at the peak, I had 16. And then, attrition.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was down to 8. And I thought, okay, you know what? Someday I might want to, leave the country. I might want to go on a trip that takes more than a few days. I might want to really go away and, visit someplace. And you really can't do that when you have that many pets. So I thought, all right, I'm just going to let the herd, die out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was during the stay-at-home order, somebody contacted me and told me that their neighbor's cat had kittens. And I went to see them. And, that's all it takes. And you're sucked in. But I have to say, those kittens, I think we've largely sort of forgotten how awful that stretch of time was,
mm-hmm.
during the stay-at-home order, and just how depressing it was and how lonely it was. And so I got these 2 goofy kittens, and I put them in the bathroom, which I always do to let them get their sea legs before I put them in with the Gen Pop. And I, on sweaty, gross, hot nights here in Santa Monica, I would go sit in the bathroom and watch those kittens. And you know what? It cheered me up. I thought to myself, it was really one of the best decisions I ever made. Now they're full grown and they break everything they possibly can. I haven't had a Christmas tree for a couple of years because it's not even worth trying with them. We call them the Vandals. They're terrible. But gosh, they were fun when they were kittens.
As long as you keep loving them, even though they're big.
Yeah, yeah. No, one of them is a black cat. Her name is Lawson. She's named after James Lawson, the great civil rights leader. That cat, it's a big, sinewy black cat. It's like having a house panther. So I made one good decision there.
That, one good decision in life is really all it takes, right?
Right. 63 years, one good decision. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not bad.
So now that all your human children have fled the roost, do they all have a gazillion cats around them too?
No. They are thus far smart enough to recognize how much work that would require. And they, they want to go do other things. So good for them. One of my kids works at a fancy dog place.
Oh.
And so she's delighted to be around animals and gets her fixed that way. And the truth is, they can all come here and pet cats whenever they want.
True. So you talk a lot about your kids, in your books and your stand-up, you talk a lot about your kids. Do you ask your kids what you're allowed to share with them before you do that?
No. I don't, and now that they're adults, I barely ever mention them other than to say they're adults. and I do say that parenting young adults is not fun because it isn't. They're not fun anymore. They, I think that they will be someday, but now, and the truth is young adult years are awful. They were for me. I'm not saying that they've told me young adult years are awful. I'm just saying in my experience, young adult years are awful. And the key to parenting, I think, not that I'm an expert in any way, but the approach that I've taken is to keep my mouth shut as much as possible,
okay.
Which is not my strength. It's another reason it's not much fun. You have to I think that you have to, as a parent of young adults, you have to say a lot of things like, well, that might work out.
Oh.
And that's not easy to do. You know, when they were little, my son asked me one time, and I forget how old he was, but he's my youngest. And one day he said to me, it was like lightning had struck him. Like it just dawned on him that I might have told stuff about him on stage. And we were here in the house, and he said, Mom, do you talk about me on stage? And I was just busted. I mean, I couldn't. I was deer in the headlights. And I said, yeah, I do. And I said, but here's the thing that you have to understand. I said, anything I tell is not unique to us in any way. And this is true, which is, I say, it's really about my struggle to parent more than it is about you or your sisters. I said, about me trying to figure out parenting, which is not easy. I said, but the other thing is, if there was any story that I told that was unique only to us, no one would laugh. They would just stare at me like I had three heads or something. It wouldn't be funny. I said, the funny part is that we all go through these things, or most of us. Most of us go through similar things during the, you know, I can't say that every person in the audience has had the same experience, but right, a lot, or else it wouldn't be funny. And he seemed comforted by that answer. And it was a true answer. The only thing that may have at the time when I was saying it been unique for me to say out loud was that my son was an electronics addict. And people at that time, although I can guarantee you they had the same experience in their home.
Mm-hmm.
They did not know that that was a thing. And come to find out, right, the apps, the, you know, all the games, all that stuff was intentionally designed to make it addictive.
Yeah.
And so I was shouting it from the rooftops because of the challenges that we were going through as a result. And people would write to me and say, was I crazy? Or, you know, oh, I'm a Luddite. Or, you know, I somehow just didn't have a good relationship with the computers. and as the years went by, you know, at one point, my assistant, who is cheap as the day is long, and often feels the need to be cheap on my behalf, even though generally speaking, I haven't asked that of him. But he's always saying, well, you got to get rid of this, or you can't have that, or you don't, you know, you really shouldn't have that. So he said to me at one point, we had to get rid of a phone line. You know, you don't need that phone line. You don't use that phone line. I said, we're not getting rid of that phone line. I'll tell you why. Because I am keeping, I think it was like the house phone or something. I said, I'm keeping that line open so that when people call to apologize for how right I was about computers and how wrong they were, I want them to be able to get through on that line. And I'll just sit beside the phone and wait. And so far, it hasn't rung.
Well, but,
but I was right.
Except for you're on Twitter all the time. Like, I'm never on Twitter, but I was like, well, I should probably check her feed since I'm interviewing her today. And dude, you tweet all the time.
I, too, am subject to the grip, to the addictive grip of electronics.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely get sucked into Twitter. I too get sucked into, you know, the sort of outrage conveyor belt from that Twitter poses. One thing I do like about it, and I did from the start before it really became evil, I like thinking of things that I think are funny and posting them. And that is a lovely platform on which to do that. And I've met people, you know, via goofy Twitter. There's things that just sort of fit on Twitter, but I don't know. I'm not sure how I would work them into my act.
That was Paula Poundstone, I'm Ann Hillman. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. We'll be back in a moment with more of our conversation.
One of the things that has made my life worth living is ringdings. And I feel that it is food. Are you going to tell me that's not food?
There's a few simple tests to figure out if a ringding is food or not. How many ingredients does a ringding have?
A devil's food cake, one.
Yeah. Now, see, right there.
A creamy filling, cream, yeah. Two.
And
a rich chocolate outer coating. What's the matter with you?
Listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. Connecting Alaskans, life informed.
I'm Michael Barbaro, host of The Daily. In this moment of uncertainty, we're bringing you the critical stories to help you make sense of it all.
Here's my question. How did the coronavirus get on Earth?
I've been in my hospital every day. It's like a war.
Extend your ambition beyond yourself because it's not about you. It's about us.
That's The Daily from The New York Times.
Weekdays at 1:30 p.m. on Alaska Public Media.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Ann Hillman. Today, we're talking to Paula Poundstone about performing, comedy, and her home full of pets. So in your act, like in your live act, you do a lot of chatting with the audience, right?
The best.
So do you like research the places you're going to before you do that so you have something to chat about, or you just try to connect to real people?
I love it that you think I might do that. because that is... such a beautiful, no, I don't research the place that I'm going because that would require the E word, effort. And I'm not going to do that. Keep in mind, I have litter boxes to sift and a backyard full of dog waste every morning. I talk to individuals in the audience and I'll say this, I use the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? Usually it's how the conversation starts. Mm-hmm. Little biographies emerge, mm-hmm. and I use that from which to set my sails about what I'm going to talk about, which I don't know usually before I go on.
Wait, you don't have like a set list? You don't have like I'm going to joke about... So everything you do up there is improv? You don't like pre-plan anything?
No, it's not improv in that I'm making it, I'm pulling it from whole cloth. Mm-hmm. It's more like... remember those amusement park games where one might step into a glass booth and they blow paper money around and whatever you can grab, you can keep. I've been doing this job for, oh my gosh, right around now for 44 years.
Dang.
And so somewhere in my head, I have 44 years of material rattling around. My act is largely autobiographical, so I generally am focusing on, you know, what I'm thinking about or doing currently. But somewhere in there is 44 years of material. So every now and then I'll tell a story about when my kids were growing up, or I'll tell something, you know, from a day job that I had 1,000 years ago, or that sort of thing. It's just whatever sort of I can grab. And if I'm talking to an audience member and they say something that reminds me of one of those things, I might grab a piece of material somewhere in my head if I can remember it. It's just as likely that what I say to that audience member in that moment is unique only to that night and will never be, you know, will never be repeated. But yeah, in general, talking to those people sets my sales.
Okay. So people who see your show in Anchorage.
So there's that that happens. There's that in that it's sort of, you know, it's sort of touchstones telling me where to go. But the other thing that happens is they tell me stuff about the area and the audience, one audience member will say something and the rest of the crowd will react. And so I can learn a lot about the area just from those little conversations, you know.
You just kind of glean information from people around you when you're doing stand-up. What about when you're doing Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is probably where most people know you from? Like, do you study for that?
I do. The thing about Wait, Don't Tell Me, for listeners who don't know, it is a weekly news quiz show, a comedy news quiz show. And being that it's weekly, the questions are about the week's news. So we as panelists, and there are three panelists on each episode that are vying for the title of most informed that week. We are aware that the stories are going to come from the week's news. We don't know which stories from the week's news. The panelists are not scripted. The only things that are scripted for the panelists are, there is one game that they play somebody who calls in, that's called Bluff the Listener. Mm-hmm. And so for that, we are told, a day or so ahead of time, we're told what the real story is. And then two of us are instructed to make up stories that fit under an umbrella category with this real story. And, you know, the truth is writing the real story is often more difficult than writing the fake story, because you want to make it funny. But if you have the real story, you're not allowed to claim something that's not true within the real story. You could allege something in a way. I mean, you could sort of couch it so that it's, you know, well, this might have happened, but you can't make up. And we write our own. And then the other thing that we know about specifically ahead of time is the very last joke in the show is called the prediction, they call it. It's the part where Bill goes, well, panel, if any of those things happen, we'll talk about it next week on Wait, Don't Tell Me. And the topic of the prediction, we get told, I don't know, usually hours before the show. But those are the only two things that we know about ahead of time. Other than, the part that I study is I do pay attention to the news. I mean, I pay attention to the news anyways, but I do pay attention to the news in order to prepare for Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I generally take some notes on the news ahead of time, hoping that I might be able to remember some stuff. I don't, in all the years I've been doing it, which is 20 something years, I don't think I've ever once, when I've been asked a question, looked at those notes. Huh. But I do write stuff down for myself, hoping that I don't just go entirely blank. But again, maybe 98% of what I've, the notes that I've taken aren't what the questions were about. Cause you just have to guess. Yeah. Now the thing that tends to, make me lose, and I am, by the way, the biggest loser on Wait, Don't Tell Me. The thing that tends to make me lose is the news of the weird. It's not the part that's embarrassing not to know. The part that's embarrassing not to know is like Ukraine,
the really obvious ones, like the monkeypox
Putin. Yeah. And every now and then I have screwed up that. I did Will Short's show one time, the great puzzle maker guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could tell he really dumbed it down for me. And one of the questions was, name the, I think it was the continents that started with an A. And do you know I missed Africa? I still wake up in a sweat from that. So sometimes just because you're being asked, and this happens to listeners when they call in too. Mm-hmm. People tend to be a little judgmental about the people who, for example, one of the games they play with a call-in listener is the listener limerick challenge, where people fill in a word on a limerick about something in the news. And they, you know, the added clue to a limerick is that, well, it's going to rhyme with, you know, one of the lines. It's going to, the word's going to rhyme with another word, which, you know, helps you narrow it down. But people will call in and it'll be like, you know, snack. You know, the whole audience is going, snack, say snack. And the person on the call is like, I don't know. Could I hear it again? What?
Yeah.
It's because you choke. That's why. Because you're doing it in front of a lot of people and you just choke.
So have you ever choked on Wait, don't tell me, like, has there ever been a moment where you're like, I got nothing?
Again.
Oh, really? You just like don't know what to say?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm the choke master. I choke like George Bush eating a pretzel. I choke.
So, like, when you're on Wait, don't tell me, do you interact with the live audience at all, or just the callers? Do you?
Very rarely, and that part gets cut out. See, that was a difficult transition for me, honestly, when I first started doing that show. Because the audience that comes to see Wait, Don't Tell Me get taped. And they're really a great part of the whole experience. You know, when I first started doing the show 20-something years ago, they, at that time, weren't in front of a live audience. Mm-hmm. They used to do it, A, during the day, like it was in the morning. And we weren't in a room together either. We were all in the NPR studio nearest to wherever we lived. And it went along just fine. I forget how many years it was like that. But then eventually, you know, somewhere along the way, I think it might have been in Boulder, Colorado, they were invited to do their show in front of a live audience, sponsored by the Boulder, Colorado public radio station. I think it was there that they first did that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you've had an audience in front of you, it's the elixir of life. And it's very hard to go back to doing it the other way. Well, so then they started doing the show in front of a live audience. But then, of course, many years later, along comes COVID. So when I first started doing Wait with the audience in front of me, I can't help myself but talk to them. I don't mean individually. I don't, you know. But be addressing them. And they used to say to me, they go, Paul, those people are there watching a radio show get made. They're not like a character in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an adjustment for me in the beginning. And I think they would be in a character in the show were it not terribly expensive to mic the audience.
That makes sense. So
yeah.
One time on Wait, Don't Tell Me, you said you made fudge with 22 cups of sugar. I'm assuming that was a joke, or was that real?
No, it was my sister and Janet Ross. And the Rosses were the fun house. You know, they were the fun house in the neighborhood. And there used to be marshmallow fluff is a product that is not sold in every state. It's not sold in California. It's a New England thing. But it's a marshmallow spread.
Oh, yeah, it's delicious. Like,
it is delicious. And they used to have, it came in a glass jar, and it had a metal lid. And the metal lid was, you know, small. And it was white with blue printing on it, like a light blue printing on it. And it had on that lid a recipe for never fail fudge. So Mrs. Ross was out one day, and we were all playing over at the Ross's house. And my sister and Janet Ross decided they were going to make the never fail fudge. And so they came to the instructions about the sugar, the ingredient for the sugar. And it appeared to say 21 half cups of sugar. What I love about this is I don't think they did the math so that they just did 10 whole cups and a half. I believe they used the half cup measurement 21 times. Of course, what it actually said was 2.5 cups, but it was small print. And it was kind of crammed in together. And so, yeah, they made fudge with 21 half cups of sugar. And I have to say it was the best fudge I've ever eaten. I love sugar. I have at times in my life eaten just sugar and just left out all the other ingredients in whatever.
I think that seems perfectly reasonable.
I used to eat, because I was born in Alabama, raised in Massachusetts. So my mother was a very good Southern cook. And in the South, you have dessert. You just do. So I found that at homes in New England, people would, they might have dessert some nights and not on others. But in my house, there was always dessert. So when I was an adult and broke with like no money, I went through a period where I ate salt for dinner and sugar for dessert. And I have to say, it did help with the cravings. Was it nutritious? No. Could you live like that forever? I wouldn't. But it was a helpful trick. It wasn't for a long, long period of time, but while it worked, it worked. I am not, Alaska Public, there's no one is endorsing. I am not a nutritionist. No one is recommending that. I'm just telling you that that's what I used to do. I'm not suggesting it was a good idea.
I caught it. Oh, good. Yeah. All right. So non-life advice from Paula Poundstone.
That's right. So this is what I did, but don't you do it. That's good. That's good parenting right there. Yeah. Just don't you do it.
we probably need to wrap this up. Anything else you think people should know about your upcoming show in Anchorage?
Not specifically, but I'll say this. It was a weird experiment, the whole stay-at-home order thing. And one of the things, I guess just recently, the person who came out is taking Fauci's place, just recently did a press conference. And one of the things he said in this press conference was that his number one issue, and this sounds weird, but that his number one issue was going to be loneliness.
That doesn't sound weird at all.
Well, loneliness, they say, it can do more harm to you than smoking, two packs of cigarettes a day, blah, blah, blah. There's all sorts of comparisons because loneliness has an effect on your physical health as well. Mm-hmm. Probably for a gallimaufry of reasons, I would assume. But here's why I mention that. I think that, and if we have a rise in COVID again, an additional rise, because we're already at 200 deaths a day, which I consider big. If we have an additional rise in COVID or a new virus, I still believe that shutting down the theaters was the right thing to do. But one of the losses that we, that I don't think anybody ever calculated about that. I think we thought about, oh, it's going to cost us money, or, oh, that doesn't sound fun. But one of the things that I experienced, both as a performer and an audience member, as a result of that, was the loss of strangers. The loss of being in a group of people as an audience that you don't know, you're strangers, but you're having a common experience and you're having this crazy emotional reaction to what you're seeing on stage, be it a concert, a poetry reading, a comedy show, doesn't matter. You're having this common reaction that binds you to strangers. And that, one of the things we discovered during the stay-at-home order as a performer, that can't be replicated in any way. You just have to do that. But I think the importance of that has been taken for granted. And so I'm not telling people that they have to come see me, although I would love it if you did. But I am saying you need to, and wear masks or whatever, but you need to be a part of an audience because it's good for you. And it's a strike against loneliness, for one thing.
That is a wonderful sentiment to end on. Thank you so much, Paula, for all of your time. I really enjoyed talking to you.
It was fun talking with you. Thank you very much. Take care.
You too.
Stay safe.
Thanks.
That was Paula Poundstone, who's appearing at the Discovery Theater in Anchorage on June 24th. This is Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. We'll have links and more info on the Hometown Alaska webpage. Do you have an idea for an upcoming show? Send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'd love to hear from you. After this break, we'll be back with State of Art.
Here's another pointer from Paula Poundstone.
Eat healthy food. Now, what that means is don't eat rocks or chairs or really big buildings or ping pong balls, no matter how fresh they are. It's better to eat like, say, apples, corn on the cob, spaghetti, or a sandwich, but not a really big building sandwich. Don't eat that.
On Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us.
Weekdays at 2 p.m., repeating at 10 p.m. on FM 91.1.
During a busy day, it can be hard to make room for even one more thing. So it's a real plus that All Things Considered from NPR News is great for multitaskers. You can confidently add being well-informed to your to-do list and know that you will get it done. Whether you're cleaning out your junk drawer on a quick drive or something else, listen to All Things Considered every weekday afternoon.
From 3 to 6 p.m. on FM 91.1. From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear about the Sundown Solstice Festival. The three-day concert features a huge assortment of well-known, up-and-coming, and local artists. It's a blend of electronic music, hip-hop, and rock. The festival starts Friday, June 16th, and runs through Sunday, the 18th at Cuddy Park. I'm joined by festival organizer and co-owner of Showdown Productions, Helen Fleming.
The biggest difference between this year and last year, she says?
Size of venue. We kind of hit our capacity downtown. You know, downtown in the summertime is crazy. You got hotels, you got tourism, you got tour buses. It's a great happening place. But when you're trying to do a public event, there's a lot of barriers to cross and hills to climb.
Literal so, barriers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So Cuddy, you know, it's midtown. It's a great central location. It's pretty far from residential, so we don't give our neighbors a huge noise complaint or anything. It's quadruple, maybe even five times the size as our Willowa footprint.
Yeah, I mean, even just the show flyer, it's like, oh man, that's a lot of names.
Yeah, so the other thing is obviously we went from 10 national acts to 55, and that was quite an expansion. It was definitely a risk, but we'll see how Anchorage kind of reacts to it. So far, it's been really positive. There is a lot of different shows and concerts this summer. We stay in kind of a lane that isn't as popular for summer events. There isn't too much hip hop. There isn't too much EDM. There isn't too much like indie rock, really. It's pretty heavy rock or bluegrass or country, which is great, but it's kind of nice.
Typical Anchorage scene
stuff. Yeah, but it's nice to have your own little lane carved out and you can expand on that. It's also worth mentioning that we really made an effort to make 30% of our lineup is female. Mm. And that was something that we really, in the beginning, wanted to do. There's definitely a lack of females on festival posters. We also have a lot of BIPOC performers as well, which was also another very important thing to us. Diversity is such a big thing on a lineup, and really just giving these artists who might not normally get their message or their voice out there to make sure that they were highlighted on this festival.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of speaking of diversity, I mean, you already kind of mentioned what went into selecting some people, just kind of making sure that there was a good amount of representation on stage. But maybe also outside of that, what kind of thought goes into like who you reach out to, especially when it does come to like some of the bigger acts?
Yeah, you always, I mean, it's kind of simple because we take people that want to come to Alaska. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of emails and, you know, we used to send a lot of emails. We used to beg.
Yeah, please come.
Please
to
come
our
to
show.
Alaska. We promise it will be okay. It was almost treated as overseas to a lot of the lower 48, you know, agents and whatnot in LA, New York, just because of the travel time.
So logistics and gear.
Yeah,
and
the idea being you could play three nights in Vegas or three dates in Boise, Seattle, and Portland. But to travel to Alaska, you have a travel day, a performance day, and a travel day, which eliminates a lot of people that are really trying to, you know, make a lot of money in a short period of time on tour. And we understand that. But you do have these artists that are kind of like looking for difference and looking for adventure and really like down to be there. The other thing is that artists that want to be in Alaska are generally more understanding. You know, we don't have as much, we're definitely working on it every day, but as much production and production technicians. You'll see Sundown is flying up at least 10 to 15 out-of-state stage technicians from around the country. If anybody's listening that loves show production, definitely email us because there seems to be a little bit of a shortage in our town and in our state for that.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like there is kind of a natural growth process too. I mean, have you heard word, I don't know, from, I would say the majority of like lower 48 or touring acts that I've seen come up here are always kind of blown away by the audience. And I don't know if you've also kind of experienced that where they were just like, oh my gosh, that was the most welcoming, stoked audience I have ever played for. I'm wondering if maybe word of mouth has kind of gotten around.
Oh yeah, word of mouth is everything. They tell their friends, okay, the craziest place you have to go is Alaska. And yeah, a lot of it is the audience. They're so welcoming. They're so kind. And they're really respectful. Like, you get kind of some of these other audiences in the lower 48, they'll get a little jaded. You know, they get so many bands and, you know, they're
this is the 10th world-class concert I've seen this week.
Yeah, so they're just kind of like, okay, cool, yeah, all right, show tomorrow. But you get these people in Alaska that are like, I've been your fan for 25 years and, you know, my child is named after you. And it's very intense at times, but it's things that artists, again, they don't forget.
Well, could you touch on maybe the headliners just a little bit? Like, I am going to be totally honest, I only recognize like two of them. But
we're
yeah,
old now.
Yeah, I know, exactly, exactly. I don't want to date myself that much. I'm like, okay, yeah, some of these like kind of more alt bands are a little bit more my flavor. But
yeah, so Slanders, a huge EDM act. They just sold two nights out in the LA Convention Center. They sold 50,000 tickets in a day. They're big. Yeah, it's crazy.
We'll be at Cuddy Park.
Yeah, exactly. Now we're going to rock Cuddy Park. Chromeo, wonderful indie kind of funk, that old school funk act, but they're from, you know, our time in the 2000s, but they sound like they're from the 80s, a bunch of synthesizers and whatnot. Big Boy of Outkast, he was, of course, there was Andre 3000 and Big Boy. He'll be coming up. He actually does perform some Outkast songs, so people will get to kind of enjoy that. Ray Shremmerd, one of the main stars of Ray Shremmerd is Sway Lee, and he actually, they just, the song Sunflower, it's in like last year's Spider-Man soundtrack, it's become the most streamed song in the entire world with 18 billion streams. Imagine that. So Sway Lee, part of Ray Shremmerd, they are a hip-hop duo with tons of, you know, hits on iTunes and Spotify, big streaming band.
Yeah,
it's going to be great.
It looks like, I mean, like a concert mixtape. Like, you kind of don't really know
every genre,
what's going to come next.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of intentional. When you're in the first year or two, you're trying to kind of find your bearings, too, as far as what your fans want. So we definitely wanted to make it diverse. I mean, Anchorage is so diverse, and our music tastes couldn't be more diverse.
Yeah, even just individuals.
Oh, yeah. You know, you're at a barbecue, and someone's over here wanting to play Snoop Dogg, and someone's over here wanting to play Old Crow Medicine Show.
Yeah, exactly. And they're, you know, all vibing.
Yeah, exactly. We definitely had that in mind when we did this. We just rock, EDM, hip-hop, all of that. So there's definitely something for everybody. This, the other thing that I wanted to mention, too, is that the festival itself is 16 and up. And I used to be big on, well, I still am, but I used to be very involved in the all ages music scene as my start. So it's very important to me to make sure that we have like youth and they're able to attend. It's funny, some of the, you know, lower names, they're huge on TikTok. I keep hearing that. Have you heard of this person? Oh, he's huge on TikTok. And it dates me for sure. I'm, you know, almost 40. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I'm like, so, you know, TikTok has really changed the game. You know, it's popularized these artists for 30-second clips of music, which to us, we're like, hey, you know what? You got to listen to an album. No skips. You know, we're purists.
Yeah.
But for these kids and these youth, how they process music, it's a really cool thing. There's a lot of very independent musicians that are starting to blow up because of this avenue. So it's great.
Yeah, you're probably not getting the kind of quite as much cookie cutter type stuff as you would in the past.
Oh,
maybe.
No. Yeah, no. It is all over the place, which is cool. Like, it keeps me young, basically, looking at some of these performances because, you know, I might not exactly vibe with it, but I can definitely appreciate it and say, I don't want to be the older person that I didn't like when I was younger that was like, get out of here, real music is this. No, music is music. And like, kids love all different types of things. And it's really interesting to me what things are very popular now. So making sure to have a healthy, you know, balance of that. And of course, we have older acts too. We have Waka Flocka, which he was so great, party music in the early 2000s. Freddie Gibbs is a really acclaimed indie rapper. He gets a lot of notoriety for being very similar to like Tupac as far as his flow and whatnot. Oh, Jeezy. And then we have like randomly, we have Silverstein and We Came As Romance. And
yeah,
that's more of like you and I scene when we like,
yeah,
back
exactly
in the day. But we're very proud of it. We are, I think it's just like, you know, we're almost a week out where it's just the anticipation now of everybody getting here and putting on great shows.
Let's see. So let's shift gears just a bit. Your crew's kind of been caught up in some city drama regarding the homeless camp abatements at Cuddy Park. Would you just like to comment on that?
Absolutely. First and foremost, I would like to sympathize with the campers and the unhoused, because What a crazy mess. When we booked this venue, we had talks in the fall. We booked it around December. The shelter was fully in place. And there were, to be honest, there were really no tents, maybe like two at Cuddy Park. Wasn't an issue. When Sullivan closed and we approached the park again, there were a lot more. And in talking with the city and kind of the city leaning on the coalition and different leaders, we had to take a step back because when it comes to public safety, we're concert promoters. We know how to keep an event safe. We know how to keep our patrons safe. But when it comes to balancing these unhoused residents and our patrons, we took a step back and we let the city decide because, you know, they knew best. They know these residents best. They know the camps. They know that kind of thing. I didn't have any information on that. So when they told me, okay, well, we're going to abate, this is what's best for public safety. We don't want the unhoused bothered. We don't want, it's really comes down to safety. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. And everything came out about the abatement. And then we're caught in the middle. And it's just kind of heartbreaking because, you know, the media is taking clips of people saying, oh, the rich people don't want to see us. Oh, it's unsightly. Oh, we're, you know, and I have definitely had a few cries, you know, in the shower over that because, you know, my mother had worked with the homeless for 20 years. We're definitely a family that has always been welcoming no matter your walk of life. And to be caught in that was really tough. And to be told, you know, some folks just don't understand sometimes how permits and insurance and all of these things are drawn. And it's really tough to change those things. Our hands were really tied. And it just sucks because in your heart's so broken for these Alaskans that are having to pack up and go and they're these homes. And so, I mean, I testified on Tuesday night and I stood up to the assembly in the city and it was kind of nice because I was just able to ask the question, why? Why was the shelter closed? You knew this was going to happen. You knew these events were going to happen. You knew that you didn't have a plan. There were no sanctioned camps. I think there could have been a better solution. We thought we were doing the right thing by just leaning on the city. And of course, now we're being told that that wasn't the right thing. But then others are telling us that it was the right thing. So it's just, we just, at the end of the day, have to keep people safe. That's our responsibility to them as a ticket buyer, that we do our best to keep you safe. And our
Sounds like kind of just like a little bit of a catch-22.
At the end of the day, the event can only speak for itself, and we're going to do a good job no matter what.
Well, what would you say that, you know, outside of all any sort of drama or heartache or anything, what are you most just kind of looking forward to about getting this thing going?
You know, last year was, I call it the pilot year. We weren't yet ready to agree to a season, but I'm very excited to show Alaskans what could be. I'm also really excited for the local artists, too, getting to play on these stages and then they get to interact in the back and kind of network and whatnot. It's a great tool for a lot of the local musicians and artists, too. That's really what it's all about. You're just trying to give people 3 days where they can just let go of day to day and have a really good time.
That was my conversation with Helen Fleming, co-owner of Showdown Productions, the organizers of the Sundown Solstice Festival. That happens Friday, June 16th through the 18th at Cuddy Park. I'm Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to Paula Poundstone. This show is produced by Ammon Swenson. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ann Hillman. Thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.